I think culture is no longer monolithic the way it was 5 years ago. So now you got a bunch of folks who are between the ages of 18 and 24, their hormones are raging, and they're being told, you should wait till you're 30 to get married. Women don't have to do much to be hot below 25. I kept trying to deal with the fruit of porn, and it was more of a symptom, having not dealt with a deeper issue. I just feel like we put a lot on pastors today. I think it's one of the hardest jobs to have.
What's going on? Welcome to the Getting to the Truth podcast, where in a world full of noise, it's so important that we have truth that we can stand on. This week, we're interviewing
Ruslan.
If you're not familiar, Ruslan's one of the biggest Christian YouTubers out right now, and I think our conversation came out great. In this episode, we talk about merging Christianity and culture. We talk about what it may be stopping men from committing to long-term relationships today. And we even get into Christian YouTubers critiquing mega pastors. After listening or while listening, make sure to check out the podcast description where I outline some of my biggest takeaways from the convo. And let me know what you think in the comments. So they say the problems that bother you the most are sometimes the problems that you're here to solve, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the problems that bothers me is the general indifference that you see from a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. So like a majority of my friends just don't care about God like that. Like if I said Muslim or Christian, they wouldn't even be able to describe the difference about it, right? Do you think that, why do you think that is? I have my theories on it, but I'm just curious.
I think we're so spoiled in the West. Mm-hmm. We have the freedom of religion, which is very unique. They know freedom of religion in China. Ain't no freedom of religion in North Korea, right? Like, or in the Arab world, right? So we have a degree of freedom that I think we take for granted. We're not really thinking like, what is the rest of the world like? Like, again, look at the world before Jesus, like in a timeline. What was the world like before Jesus? What was the world like after Jesus? And then just look at the world today in the least Christianized places versus the most Christianized places, right? And we have a very privileged life here, especially in the West, where we don't have to think about these things. They're just like, oh yeah, like God, right? But it's like, no. You don't really get how much freedom you have to even be agnostic or neutral or whatever you think you are, right? So I think one, we are so enamored in a culture that is actually built, I wouldn't call America a Christian nation, but built on Christian principles, freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom, democracy, all these different things are inspired by the scriptures. I wouldn't say they're one for one, but they're definitely inspired and overflowing from a Judeo-Christian worldview. And so I think one, people just take it for granted. People don't really know what they got, and they wouldn't know unless they went and traveled and saw some other places.
When you say that, what's interesting is because I'm thinking if we did have more people who were very like overtly Christian, I would imagine then we would be able to help the mass majority of the world that's in need. You know what I mean? So then thinking that, what do you think we could do as let's say we're talking just America, to get us to a point of seeing the importance of it? You know what I mean?
Well, I think for starters, like the Christians who are sold out or convinced, like I'm convinced, I believe Jesus is who he says he is. I believe the Bible is reliable. I'm in a local church. I think those of us that are there need to live it out to the best of our abilities. So that looks like radical generosity, which is all over the New Testament. That looks like being faithful stewards of our time, talent, and treasure. That looks like having the self-awareness to know what season you're in. Are you in a season of building? Are you in a season of sowing? Are you in a season of starting a family and having little kids? Or are you in a season of going? Are you in a season of sending? Are you in a season of building? I think most people aren't even that aware. We're so immersed in the details of our life that we don't think about, like, where am I at? What am I doing? What am I contributing to the kingdom? Am I a conduit of God's goodness on this side of eternity? And I honestly think it starts there. I believe if more Christians did the basic Christian things, we could see our country transformed.
You know, and I actually feel the same way. I think that comes down to kind of like deepening.
I was just gonna say, like, you gotta think about it. When you were in school, I'm sure you would have classes that were graded on a curve. right? And so when you're grading on a curve, like you got A, B, C, D, E, F, G, that's the normal class, so A is 90% and up, right? Well, when you're grading on a curve, you're taking the average scores. And so like a passing grade would be a C, which is a 70 out of 100. But if you're grading on a curve, that passing could be a 45. Like the whole class could just not get it. Mm. And so now it's a 45 and most people are underperforming, which shows you that either the information isn't hidden correctly, or the people just aren't the students aren't competent, or a combination of all the above. So the curve skews down usually, or it could skew up. In our society, I would say everything is skewed down. Everything is skewed to, then, you know, 10, 20 years ago, a 70 was passing. Now a 50 is passing. You get a 50, you're good, right? And so what that does is that lowers the bar. So the bar now is lower to the point where the average person is struggling. 60% of men in church confess to looking at porn at least once a week. Like, you just have so many things, right? Folks overweight, living paycheck to paycheck, anxiety, depression, deaths of despair, all these things are up. Life expectancy is down, right? This is a crazy time we're in.
Yeah.
And we could talk about the systems, and we could talk about wealth inequality, and we could talk about the cost of living, and we could talk about inflation and bad policy. We talk about all that. But at the end of the day, the curve is lowered. So that sucks for most people. Like, most people are struggling. Most people aren't doing well. But what that also does is you just got to be like a B minus. Like, if you're just a B minus as a dude, you are an A in today's society.
100%.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, if we had more Christians that were like, hey, like, I'm getting into the book of Proverbs. I'm looking at the parable of the talents. I'm looking at the Ecclesiastes. I'm looking at the wisdom of God. I'm implementing it. And you just are above average. Like, you're just a you know, you're not a C 71%. You're just an 81. 81 is an A plus, 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 plus now, right? And so I'm saying is, if Christians were just 81%, like, right, if we just showed up and just did the bare minimal to get a B, I think now we would be scoring off the Richter scale, because so much of society is struggling for a variety of reasons.
You hear conversations about like manhood, mm-hmm, and conversations about how men today are lacking. You know what I mean? Like, you have Kevin Samuels saying, if you make 100,000, you're now platinum, or whatever. You know what I mean? And I think we're in a time now where there's so much consumption, that where everybody's kind of fighting for our attention, mm-hmm, that it's difficult to even break out of like being a consumer to produce anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And time just flies by. So you were blessed to get married young, right? Mm-hmm. So you...
I was 23.
23 when, yep, you were married.
Yep.
And of course, we know we're in a different time now. You know what I mean? First of all, do you feel like at 23 you were even prepared to make that choice of like, who's going to be my wife?
I think it depends on the individual. I think it depends on the individual, and it depends on your value system and how rooted you are in your faith, in the virtues you want to put out there. And so for us, it was good. Like, I knew I wanted to marry my wife from the first time we really sat down and had a conversation. That was fairly clear to me. And so in my case, I think it was a no-brainer. Now, that doesn't mean that I was like mature, or I was some savant, or some, like, I was still a 19-year-old kid with a lot of issues when we met. And 4 years later, I still had a lot of issues that I spent, you know, almost better part of a decade working on after we got married. But I think generally speaking, I definitely would advise it for people who know who they are, know what they want, and are sober enough that they want to build a life with somebody. Now, if you don't know who you are and you want to trick off your 20s and you want to go and do, I want the college experience, I want this, I want that, I want, you know, that's different. But that was never me. Like, I was never really, like, I didn't have a college experience. I was never in a fraternity, right? Like, I didn't do those things. I just was like, I'm locked in. You know, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that there was something to communicate about God's truth and God's word back then, you know, mm-hmm, like 17, I get saved. A few months later, like, I'm leading all the kids at my church. We have like it was like an open mic ministry, right? And so I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that what I was going to do wasn't going to be about chasing money.
Right.
In hindsight, I probably should have been a bit more financially diligent, but I was chasing impact. I was chasing, how can I make kingdom impact? So for me, I think it was great. I think there's practical utility to getting married young, specifically not burning with lust. Your biology is wired in a way as a man and as women where 150 years ago, like Cass was getting married younger, having full families by the time they were 21, 22 years old. Our biology ain't changed. We ain't evolved that much in 150 years. So now you got a bunch of folks who are between the ages of 18 and 24, their hormones are raging, and they're being told, you should wait till you're 30 to get married. And I'm like, that, and then you take the, so that's just a natural biology aspect, right? Then you take the environmental aspect. You take the world, you take pornography, you take all these things that are more accessible than they've ever been before. And I think you're setting up people to fail. I think you're setting up people to either slide into addiction to porn, or you're sliding into hookup culture, or you're just digressing and you're just completely checking out because you don't know how to talk to women at all. And so you just check out of the market completely. And I don't think that's good. I don't think that's helpful on a spiritual, theological level of like, be fruitful and multiply. And if we were to take the materialistic, secular point of view, we have to maintain our own population, or like our society is going to collapse, right? If you look at what's happening in parts like South Korea, Japan, China, they're not reproducing at the rate to maintain their older population. There's not enough younger people working to support the system. And there's a lot of tensions that's creating, right? And so there's so many different ways that like getting married and starting a family is a net positive. It doesn't mean everybody's going to do it. And we serve a Messiah that was single, that never got married, never had kids. Paul, they say he was single or widowed. We don't know. But I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying, logically speaking, most people are going to want kids. Most people are going to want to get married. The question is, when is the proper time to do that? And I think if we remove the degeneracy happening in culture, we remove some of the nonsense we've been taught, and we remove, this is going to hurt some people, but we remove some of the vanity, fantasy chasing, like chasing a fantasy instead of working your land. Proverbs says, those who work their land will have abundant food, and those who chase fantasies will have their fill of poverty.
Can we not go too fast past that one?
Okay.
When you say that, what do you mean, vanity?
So there's a lot of people who want to be, when I grew up, everybody wanted to be an athlete or a rapper.
Yeah.
Statistically speaking, you're unlikely to make it as an athlete or a rapper. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do something around being an athlete or a rapper, right? And there's a lot of people that built careers of being a television podcaster, or that's a podcaster, but doing stuff about that. But this thing that like you could be a rapper or an entertainer or an athlete, like this is statistically very unlikely to do that.
Right.
And so now, but that's not to say you can't, like you could always become the outlier.
Right.
But to become the outlier, most people don't know what it takes, right? They don't know what it takes to be the
100%.
I'll give you an example. If anybody's ever watched Jeremy Lin's Linsanity documentary, he was the shortest one amongst his entire family. Right. So he was the shortest one, and they're Asian. Right. So it's not like they're mad tall.
Yeah.
And his mom, very early on, I want to say like 10, 11, 12, was like, well, he told her mom, I want to be a basketball player. I want to be tall. So she got him on a high protein diet and completely changed everything about the way he eats. And he ends up sprouting up to be one of the tallest people, right, in his family. The tallest one in his family, goes to the league, still playing professional basketball overseas. I don't think most people understand that degree of sacrifice at that young of an age to go that out of your way with trainers, nutritionists, discipline, delaying other activities to become Jeremy Lin.
Yeah.
Now parallel that to what's happening in society. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur today. That's the new athlete. Everybody wants to be an influencer today. That's the new baller. That's the new rapper. That's the new entertainer, right? I don't think people are counting the cost. So you're halfway doing something without really understanding everything it takes. So now you're just oversaturating the market because you're not really serious. You're just kind of dabbling. Mm-hmm. You're not dominating.
Right.
So then what does that do? That oversaturates the playing field. That decreases the overall quality of what's being put out there. And it ultimately sets you up to chase fantasies because you haven't really counted the cost on what it actually takes to get to said destination.
Bro, I think you're hitting on something that is plaguing a lot of people right now, especially when you consider let's just pick any job, like an accountant. Mm-hmm. I think has the aspirations of living a rapper lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of like, you know, a lot of people kind of envision themselves in that arena. I do think that what you're talking about may be what's stopping a lot of men from committing early, because there's the idea that I'm just not where I like plan on being. So I'm going to hold off on kind of starting a family and things. When in all actuality, what we're seeing a lot of the time is they get to 30, they get to 28, whatever, and they get to a point where it's like, you didn't become the rapper, and now you're still kind of like just grabbing at the wind. You know what I mean? And like, then there's like how you see yourself, and it gets nasty. So I love what you're talking about, because I think it does kind of hit on a lot of important things. One, I love how you kind of said what's important is to like know who you are, mm-hmm. right? I think that that's something that kind of can stop some of that chasing fundamentally. Like if you know who you are and like what you want to do. I also love how you touched on what things cost. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes, well, many times when we set goals, we don't know the cost of something and often underestimate what it takes to get something, mm-hmm. when really that information is so easily accessible, mm-hmm. right? Like if you want to know what it costs to be in the league, if you want to know what it costs to be the biggest influencer or whatever, you can literally go online right now and try to access what that person's day-to-day looks like and what their invested time to even get to that day-to-day mm-hmm. look like for them to get there. But most people don't do that. You know what I mean? And most people kind of would just say, you know, yeah, like, and what hurts the most though, is you'll see that there's a sense of feeling like you've arrived there, mm-hmm. even though you haven't. Mm-hmm. So like you'll have a lot of like men walking around feeling like Odell, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When in all actuality, you've done nothing to even get to like, for you to even view yourself that, you know, I think you're hitting on a lot of stuff right now that probably.
And here's the flip side to it, is that there's also another side where what you're seeing as someone's accomplishment may not be feasible without extreme sacrifice and or detrimental behavior to yourself. So I'll mm-hmm. give you an example. Like if we're talking fitness, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Most people can become reasonably fit. Most people can get lean, hour a day in the gym, cut out the processed food, increase the chicken, do that for a year or two, especially if you've never lifted. You'll get newbie gains. You'll look great.
100%.
Right? Especially if you're younger on the spectrum. If you're already older and you're overweight, it's going to take more work. But a year or two of consistency. So most people can't calculate, oh man, I can't eat candy and junk every day. And I got to go to the gym for an hour a day, 6 to 7 days a week. And I got to do that for a year and properly train and do all the proper things. Proper nutrition, proper training, proper rest for a year. Can most people do that? I think you can. I think most people, if they actually understood how much their body can transform in a year, they could do that.
Right.
Because it's worth it.
Yeah.
Here's the flip side. What is curated to us on social media of a fit physique is usually complete genetic freaks or people on steroids. So now our comparison isn't like, what does a natural guy in his mid-20s look like who's in elite level shape and fit without a shirt on? Now we're comparing ourselves to dudes that have been on steroids for 3, 4, 5 years. Mm. And we think that's attainable without compromise. Mm. So in the Christian's life, you go, hey man, I want to do X, I want to make this much money, I want to have this much influence, I want to reach this many people. You don't know that the pathway to get that might be the equivalent of taking steroids and doing yourself in indefinitely.
Yeah.
Right? Now, again, this, you can get into TRT and when you're in your 40s and there's a natural...
It's still steroids.
Useful, it's still steroids. But there's a time and a place where some people who are older, right. they could take it and it'd be safe with a doctor.
Okay.
But generally speaking, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Right? Generally speaking, it's not worth it. And I don't think people count the cost on that end of the spectrum. Like, you don't know what you really want. Like, you think you're looking at Gideon, who grew to 5 million subscribers, one of the biggest black creators. But Gideon is telling you after he came to faith, like, I had to compromise. I had to compromise a lot to get here. I had to compromise my faith. I had to compromise my value. I had to compromise business relationships. I had to get in bed with people I didn't want to get. That's the equivalent of steroids, right? So it's also like, it's like most people undershoot, but then some people overshoot and they don't know what they're looking at. That it ain't what you think it is, right? Yeah. Whether that's music, entertainment, and you don't really want that on your soul. Like, you don't really want to be that guy, because that guy has deals with consequences of taking steroids. That guy has to constantly check his blood work. That guy gets injured and then has to take time off. And that guy, if he gets off the steroids, is going to lose a lot of that muscle and not going to look the same.
No, yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean.
It took me a long time to even I did not realize how many people, like that many people, were taking steroids.
Bro,
I'm sitting here like, yo, I'm trying to get my abs to this level. I'm like, right. Is this even possible?
Yeah, you're not walking around. You're not walking around sub 10% body fat year around,
right?
Naturally, unless you're just a complete genetic outlier, and that literally means like the 0.00001% of people, right?
Yeah.
Most people aren't living like that, but. Instagram would have us believe they are. You know what I mean?
So then you living like the life that you're living, did you find yourself while being married comparing yourself to others who may not be married or may be married and question whether you made the right decisions? Like being so young, I would imagine it'd be hard for me to like look at single people and be like, dang, like did I get married too early or am I going about this thing the right way? Did you kind of battle with that? Or could you just seem so sure? You know what I mean? But like,
nah, I would say, I mean, me and my wife have a great marriage. We've been married, it'll be 16 years in July, together 20 years. So we're getting to that point where we've been together longer than we've been apart, right?
Which is crazy.
So no, I don't think I ever thought, oh man, should I have stayed single? The caveat to that is that because Jesus got a hold of me so young, I didn't go out and wild out. Like I never had a season. Like I was a bad kid, smoked weed, lost my virginity super early, but I didn't have I'm at the club, I'm on Tinder. We didn't have Tinder. Like I wasn't indulging like that. So there was nothing to compare it to. And then the folks I knew who were doing that and living that way weren't happy. Like they seemed like it was more of a headache. The dudes with multiple females, like it seemed like that. I just come home to one woman and I just gotta make her happy and make sure we're good. You got all these situationships and all this drama.
So you had the examples of people who were living like reckless and did not necessarily, were not necessarily jealous of that situation.
No.
Okay.
No.
So then to be honest, I think that really then speaks to your ability to select the right person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
God, in God's goodness and in God's providence as well.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Because just thinking about it, like, I would imagine, like, if let's say you didn't make a, like, if you did pick somebody that you probably weren't meant to be with, there would kind of be like that yearning to kind of see what else is going on.
Yeah, you got to know yourself and you got to know the partner you want should not just be someone that has the superficial attributes that you like. One thing I agree with Mike Todd on is he talks about throwing away your list. Right. And in terms of the relationship goals thing. And I would say throw away your list in the sense of like all the vanity metrics, like the height, the eye color, the skin tone. You know, 100%. Those things are not it. You want someone that's healthy. You want someone that loves Jesus. You want someone that got character and integrity. You want someone that's diligent. The vanity stuff. And so the moment I stopped caring about the vanity stuff, then that's when I was able to settle into a beautiful relationship.
But you didn't fully stop caring about the vanity.
I mean, I'm attracted to my wife.
Right. I just want that they know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. So what I'm not saying is go be with somebody you're not attracted to, right? But I'm saying even the ideas of beauty and attraction, I think, can be narrowed down to a couple variables. So first, we got to know Proverbs says that charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. So whatever you have today, that could be gone. And one of the things you could really look at is, okay, this young lady's attractive. What do her older sisters look like? What do her mom look like? So you can get you can get a girl and she could be fly at 25.
Yeah.
But go look at her mom at 45. Go look at what a couple kids do to genetically to them, right? So it's like you got to know that for starters, because you get with someone that's hot and they don't know how to take care of themselves and they could be busted at 35, 40 years old, and now you're stuck. You know what I mean? So there's the genetic component, and I don't think most people really look like. I peeped what my wife's mom looked like, and I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm good, I'm straight." You know,
you peeped at 23,
bro. I peeped that 18, 19, 20 years old. I was so like,
"Okay, you were advanced though, bro."
I was looking at that, and then the second thing is, what is the person's character? What is the person's relationship with Jesus like? What is her reputation? And I know people were like body shaming and sex slut shaming or whatever. No. I did my recognizance. I asked around. I made sure homies ain't been through that. You know what I mean? Like really did my due diligence. I was like, oh no, she's like actually a good girl. And then the her care for people. How does she treat people? How is she with kids? How is she with older people? How is she around with people that are older? She show respect. So it's like those attributes. And then it's like, do our health and fitness values line up, right? And then when I figured out, oh, she's down to go to the gym. She eats healthy. Again, those are things that are going to last into the 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. When you got to, again, you could, women don't have to do much to be hot below 25, right? But post kids, now it's just like a dude. Dudes always got to do something to be attractive. Unless you're, again, outlier, genetic freak, athlete, 0.001%. Most dudes have to go to the gym. Most dudes got to get the right amount of chicken in. Most dudes got to become a competent man. 100%. You got to work. It's not like that for women. So there's a lot of beautiful women between the ages of 18 to 25 that they age like milk, yeah. You know? And so it's like, again, all of those variables now you have to think about. You got to do a bit of thinking and you got to reason amongst yourself instead of like, oh, she's hot. Because what's hot at 25 ain't going to be hot at 45.
Man, I mean, I'm just one. I first of all, I don't know too many 23-year-olds with that perspective. I'm not even saying that you're saying that you had all this insight. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of it's hindsight.
I knew about the mom thing. I knew about that early on.
That's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy. But I think what is crazier to me is that you didn't necessarily sip the Kool-Aid of thinking that being a man who has access to a lot of women or like is dating a lot of women at the same time is like a part of life that you should try to experience for as long as you can.
Well, because I had Jesus. That's really it. Like, I had Jesus.
I do know a lot of people who have Jesus. Maybe not.
Well, let me.
Maybe not a full tank of Jesus.
Yeah. I would say I had Jesus in a very tacit sense where my free time when I wasn't working was doing things to try to build the kingdom. So I didn't have time for that. Mm. I'm also an only child. So I wasn't the most self-aware as a kid. I didn't really know that like Ruslan on a ratio, like a lot of girls find you more attractive than not. You could have your pickings. Like I would be the dude that like the flyest girl at the school would be like, hey, can you give me a ride home to school? Can you come in and hang out? And I'm like, no. I give you a ride, like just like as a Christian brother, like just give a ride. I just didn't get it. Like I didn't get like, oh, like they was trying to get me to come in and do something. Right. I didn't get none of that, bro.
Yeah, and that's what I think is like great about what you're saying. Like you didn't necessarily, you're not taking advantage of that position. Because yeah. I also could imagine somebody like, especially getting married so early with time, as you get more successful, being more and more tempted to leverage your success. You know what I mean? Like you at today, Ruslan today, is in position to, if you wanted to, get whatever girl you wanted. You know what I mean? So it's like, to not have, like, you know, taking advantage of that is something that I think a lot of people may not have done.
Yeah, but what I also was fortunate in a very unfortunate matter to be around folks that went through divorces, like really close to multiple people that went through really messy divorces. And it was one specific person who was married to a very attractive young lady. He had a lot of status as an artist, and he brought around another person of a lot of status as an artist. Mm-hmm. And they're married with a kid, and this other dude is married with kids, and they end up having, his wife and his buddy end up having, committing an adulterous affair. Jeez. And like it hits the fan, like it was bad. Like they relocated down here to try and get a fresh start. And it didn't work. She kept messing with him. The dude was flying in. And he would like one day found the dude's laptop in the trash can and his backpack in the trash can. Mm. And he really fought for the marriage and it didn't work. And so watching that, like being close to someone like that, I'm talking like we're sending them off to a marriage conference and watching their kid and with the hopes that God would fix it. And it wasn't fixed. And he, seeing what that did to him, seeing what that did to their daughter, seeing what that did to her, I was like, bro, no, that is not in the slightest worth it. It is not worth it at all to be out here hoeing around, you know what I mean, as a married man.
So you had access to the right horror stories, too.
I had access to the right horror stories.
You had access to the right horror stories.
Yeah.
So then right now, a lot of people are also struggling with, like, porn, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, just, you know, can't stop. With that being said, I kind of feel for a majority of people because your phone is just right there. You know what I mean? Like when I first was introduced to porn, I had to go to the computer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was like a real process. But now it's like the moment you have a phone, it's just right there. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, you know, just general curiosity. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're growing up, I remember like fourth grade, you see, they show you like the sex video. You're just curious, like, what is this all? What's this all about? And if you have your phone, you could just, you know, do anything. How would you like talk to somebody who's wrestling with that to convince them that, you know, there's another way to explore themselves? Or I don't even know if exploration is even something that a Christian should be doing, but you see what I'm saying.
I think first you got to examine if the porn is the fruit of an issue or if there's something deeper in the root of the issue. So there's like in my case with porn, like I was exposed to porn at 5, sexually assaulted at 8, lost my virginity at 11. Mm. Like that was a deep stronghold. Crazy. Going all the way back to my childhood. I kept trying to deal with the fruit of porn. And it was more of a symptom, having not dealt with a deeper issue of sexual trauma from my childhood. And once I was able to deal with the sexual trauma and understanding, okay, this is why I am this way. This is why I do these things. That allowed the healing to begin. There are other people that are just like, yo, I just like pretty girls. I just like naked girls, naked bodies, right? I would parallel it to some people eat because there's a void and they're trying to self-medicate with food because it's a deeper issue they're not dealing with.
Right.
Man, other people just like starchy, unhealthy food because it tastes good. And it's not that deep. So I think first you gotta say, which one am I?
Because I wasn't even thinking about the deep stuff.
So, yeah, because sometimes we got deep stuff that like we've never dealt with that is like literally a stronghold from your childhood, something crazy happened, and that needs to be addressed, possibly therapy, right? And then there's the other side where like, yeah, like nothing may have happened and you just like, pretty girls and naked bodies are fly and I like looking at them, right?
Yeah.
It's just purely biological, right? That's different. So I think one, we got to figure out where are you at, right?
Yeah.
Confess, reveal, because sometimes it's not. I was sinned against as a kid. So even though I was responsible in me dabbling and engaging with porn, I was also a 5-year-old with access to porn. I was also 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, unsupervised, looking at porn. Like, that wasn't on me in the same way that, you know what I mean? Like as a grown man, you're looking at, so I had to reveal some of that. And then the repentance is like changing your mind on it. And the repentance is hard because when you repent, you change your mind. Sometimes we have a lot of presuppositions of how life is and like, oh, okay, I guess I just got to have a smartphone. No, you don't. Who says you got to have a smartphone? I just got to be on the internet. No, you don't. Who says you got to be on the internet? I got to be on social media. No, you don't. You don't got to be on social media, right? I think if we remove that presupposition and just say, well, maybe I can go a season without my smartphone. Or maybe I can have a flip phone and have a phone in a specific place of the house or an iPad with all my social media and all my apps and my iMessage over here. And then I just go through day to day with it. Like that could be cleansing for a lot of people. So if I repent, now we're changing our mind about the presupposition and you got to remove the said issue. You got to remove whatever the trigger is. For me, it was just staying up too late. I was staying up, working on music, up. Your willpower depletes as the day goes on. That's why you make worse decisions at night. That's why you are less gracious with your mouth at night. That's why you look at stupid things at night. That's why you eat bad things at night. So I just said, oh, I'm just going to get up earlier. I'm going to go to bed. When my wife goes to bed, I'm going to get up earlier, get up between 5:30 and 6:30 every morning. And then at the end of the day, I'm tired. I'm not staying up until 1, 2 in the morning. I'm fried. I'm in bed by 9:30, 10. There's less access to do stupid stuff, right? And then I say the last one is you gotta replace it. I call it the law of replacement. You got to replace that with something new, something different. For me, it was the gym. For me, it was going deeper in the word. I got a prayer journal. I write out my prayers. And so you start replacing the negative habits with the new habits, with the better habits, right? So maybe serving at your church, maybe starting a podcast, maybe starting a business, maybe starting a side hustle. You got to replace it with something better. And so I think that's how I would approach that issue. And it's never you've arrived. Like you always got to be diligent and on guard and careful because you open up Instagram, go to the Explorer page. There's a lot of soft porn on your Explorer page, 100%. You know? And then I'm like more diligent towards my kid, like my 8-year-old. He's turning 9 next week. We've already had the sex talk. We've already talked about these things, and we're anchoring these things in a healthy biblical worldview, because my friends whose dads love Jesus and had that talk with them didn't grow up with that issue. They didn't grow up addicted to porn. They got and they were able to get married at a young age, under 25, get married, develop a healthy sex life, not be mastered by it. And so that's how we break the cycle.
Wow. Yeah. I already had the sex talk at 8.
Well, we were having a biology talk early. Like early, I'm talking like 4 or 5. Jeez. Maybe younger. Like mommies have the egg, daddies have the sperm, daddy's eggs go into mommy. That's where babies come from. Babies come out of them. So we were talking that conversation. And so it wasn't the talk. It was a combination of talks. We were having constant talks.
Honestly, man, I think that's really good though.
Yeah.
Because thinking about like coming up, I think part of, because what I was really thinking about is just like that initial curiosity, because like when I think back to how do you even get to the point of being addicted, it started with like what happened in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And when I think about my parents did not have a sex talk with mm-hmm. me. You know what I mean? It was like I don't think they are bad parents for not doing mm-hmm. that, but it just wasn't my experience. But if it were something that weren't like this secret, I think then your perspective on it may be one that's not just your own, mm-hmm. but it's more of like a community, everybody else kind of like, it's more of an open perspective. Yeah. It's not as much in the dark. And I think that can help out a lot.
Yeah.
Like making it less of like a taboo topic.
Yeah.
And I like how you kind of like said, you know, okay, we're not going to start with the craziness, we're going to just start with biology. You know what I mean? Yeah. And stuff like that.
And so when we just had the talk again, like a week ago, it was like, then we got into the sex. Then we got into boys have penises, girls have vaginas, the penis fits in the vagina, semen comes out, semen carries the sperm, it feels good. You know what I mean?
Like, was he following?
Yeah. Because he was like, what is sex? Like I said, because it was like a curriculum I was going through. Okay. And then he's like, what is sex? And so like I explained it to him and he was like, huh. And then I was like, you've never heard about this? He was like, nope. And I was like, okay, good. Like, that means that his friends haven't gotten to him. You know what I mean? Because some of my other friends have had to talk with their kids as well. So I was like, I was also, okay, cool. No one's mentioned it. So this is brand new. So I can then anchor that in
That's great.
A Christian aspect, which again, in within a Christian worldview, it's like sex is great. Sex is beautiful. Sex is awesome. Sex is so awesome that we have to reserve it for the one person we're going to commit to spending the rest of our life with. And we talked about the consequences of it. We talked about when you do it out of God's order, right? We talked about single moms. We talked about what it means to be in a different household than your dad and your mom. And hey, you know, we have friends that we love and we care for, but you notice their situation is different.
You told them about that too?
Oh, yeah. 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 And so we talked about all of it. And so it was a lot of like, this is why it's done in order, because when you do things in God's order, you set yourself up for the most amount of stability.
Wow. So okay. So I respect that way of parenting too. You have one kid or two?
So I have a 8-year-old. He's about to be 9 on Friday, and then we have a 2-year-old. She's 2.5. So
nice. So then there's the whole conversation of culture and like Christianity and like the merge of the two, right? I would like to see Christians like overtly leading in like various different industries. If it's entertainment, if it's music, if it's law, whatever, right? And when you see like that not necessarily being what's highlighted in the culture, for me, that just kind of like, it bothers me a little bit, right? But I've had interesting conversations about that. I've had people tell me, how can you expect the world to align with God? It's the opposite. And what I'm trying to now shape is, what does this world look like in an idealistic state? I don't think idealism is something that is like happening, but at the same time, it is something that like I want to fight for. You know what I mean? And in fighting for that, I want to know what that vision looks like. You know what I mean? Like when I hear Kanye ultralight beam or anything like that, it's like, it feels like that. This is what it should be. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, is that, I don't know. You know what I mean? And as somebody who's always talking about kingdom and culture, I'm very curious to see your perspective on this situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, I think it's going to go back to excellence, right?
Of course.
If you're great at something, your gift will make room for you.
Yes.
Right? So excellence, I think, is going to be the bedrock. And then it's the overlap with how we engage in culture. If we're just always slamming culture, then culture's probably going to be like, yo, what's up? You know, if we're correcting culture, but we're redirecting culture, then I think it might be a bit more receivable, you know, to said culture, said conversation. So I think it's also how we go about it. I think there are probably, I don't know, I don't want to put a lid on what anybody can or can't do, but I do know if you want to get somewhere big and you want to get somewhere fast, like that's probably going to come with some degree of compromise, yeah, right? Whether that's, hey, we're going to start using profanity because it's cool and edgy and that will make me appeal to it, or whatever it is, right? And I have friends that have done all the above and we've had these conversations offline. But there's going to be some degree of like, you know, we're now starting to use the steroids, right? Now we're starting to use the steroids. And that could become an ethical question. That could also become a personal question where people are at personally. And so I think we have to examine and count the costs and all those things. But from my experience in terms of culture, this is what I found. I found that when you're great at what you do, the world becomes less, when you're great at what you do and you're strategic in how you communicate the hard truth, the world is less threatened by it. When you're abrasive and you're trash, then the world's going to just check out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'll give you an example. I went to Sean Cannell's 40th birthday party. Sean Cannell runs Think Medium. And there was quite a few creators there and quite a few people there that were familiar with me. And one of them was a big finance niche creator who I had done some videos about some of his stuff. And it wasn't like flattering. Like I was critical of a couple of points.
Is this Anthony O'Neill?
No, I mean, Anthony are homies. I've never reacted to...
I've seen like photos.
Yeah, Anthony's a friend. He's actually going to be on the channel next week.
Oh, nice.
No, this is a different creator. I'll tell you, it's offline. And because he had seen my video and noticed the quality of it, and because Think Media did a 3-part series on my studio, there was no weirdness. Like, he knew who I was, he liked what I did, and he was cool, and he was down to even come on the channel, possibly, right? This is somebody I just fluffed up. Like, I was critical of some of them. And even in the conversation, I was critical. Like, you know, you had this conversation about religion, it kind of fell flat. How do you feel about that? Da, 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 da. And he was cool, right? And so I think it's because the execution and there's excellence to it. And then also in the way I would correct and be critical, I wasn't just dunking on this dude for the sake of dunking on this dude, right? And so I think that's generally speaking how, if we are to engage in culture and try to persuade culture, it's a give and take. It's a tug of war, but it's a give and take. You can't just come down heavy handed. You got to be strategic. So what we've been doing now, I'll say within the last year, 8-9 months to a year, is we really try to focus in on, we call it net positive videos. Find something that someone said and say, this is good, and let's add to it, right? And let's add to it. Instead of finding something someone said that was stupid and exposing how stupid it was and how crazy it was, we're trying to find things that are good, at least on the main channel.
Right.
Good things, and then add to it. Yes, and. Tyrese just shared how Jesus saved his life. It was awesome. His Sprinter van caught on fire. He does this 40-minute Instagram that he pinned up to his Instagram profile for 17 million followers to see. And he's just testifying to Jesus and how good Jesus is and his renewed energy for how Jesus saved him in this potential awful car accident where Sprinter van caught on fire. I didn't go out of my way to critique all the other things Tyrese have said, maybe that I disagreed with, right? But I did highlight something he said that was good, that was positive. And there's things he said that I don't agree with. And because I did it that way, that's opened a door for me to build a relationship with him. And we're texting and we're DMing and he might come on the channel. You know what I mean? And so it's like, excuse me, figuring out that method, which is difficult because so much of Christian YouTube is just dunking on the left, or dunking on atheists, or dunking on celebrity pastors, or dunking on whatever the bad boogeyman is, instead of trying to meet people where they're at. And so I'm really trying to be better at, like, if I don't have something nice to say, let me just not say anything at all. And if I'm going to say something negative, let me try to find something positive to highlight the negative parts that I disagree with.
100%. And so then when you hear people talk about the culture, mm-hmm. right? To me, when I think about like what the culture actually is, it's mm-hmm. kind of hard to define now, mm-hmm. right? And many of it, or many of things I would feel fall with under that umbrella are things that feel trash, mm-hmm. right? Like we're highlighting, like you'll be scrolling, a Shade Room post, get a blog post that in your, and it becomes like the topic that we all talk about, but mm-hmm. I don't even understand like why this specific thing is what like we're highlighting, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What's your perspective on the culture? Because I do acknowledge your point in excellence is what will allow for anybody to lead in an industry. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm bothered by is the fact that when you look at just what's influencing us, like what's the topic of group chats, what's the topic of like discussion a majority of the time, it just feels like it's nonsense every time, right? And I'm like, granted, look, I know that like there needs to be an essence of entertainment to the things that we find entertaining. I'm just curious as to, do you feel like there's a way that the main topics that are discussed, the main things that people are excited about could potentially be of good origin from a Christian source, if maybe, what's your perspective on that?
I think culture is no longer monolithic the way it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, where everything was like kind of centralized. Like I think the internet decentralized culture.
That is true.
So there's different pockets of culture.
Yes.
Right? And we have to then examine like what pockets of culture. So I'll give you an example. Like there's certain pockets of culture that I would not engage in because it's not a good look for me, and it's hearsay, and it's not helpful. There's a story going viral right now about Will Smith and his assistant being on the Tasha K podcast. I'm not sure if you've seen this.
I have not seen it.
It's bad. It's real bad. It's dark. It's real bad. And his assistant is...
Oh, I did kind of like... See, I scrolled past it. Yeah. But it was like some dude... Okay, yeah, I'm following.
Yeah, and he says some really foul stuff about him that I would just never talk about. Like, I'd just be like, yo, that's hearsay. It's not verified, and I'm not going to lean into that conversation, yeah. right? Even though I am not a fan of Jada, I'm not a fan of the Smiths, I'm not a fan of what they represented, I'm not a fan of their children, I'm not a fan of their worldview, I'm not a fan of the Scientology, way they've talked about Jesus, Christianity, I'm not a fan of any of that, right? Okay. And this would be an easy way for me, if I was just about clicks and likes, to be like, yo, Will Smith's ex-assistant and best friend said, bong, bong, bong.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to lean into that. Yeah. I'm not going to lean into that because that to me is just in a darkness that I don't even want parts of.
I think you just answered the question because now that I think like to your point, yes, the loudest of all the cultures, mm-hmm. The loudest of all the culture pockets may be nonsense. I think as the other maybe smaller potential cultures now be more excellent,
yep.
then you have maybe a transfer in what's being focused on with time.
Now, if Will Smith came out and verified what this ex-assistant / best friend said, then, okay, now you're saying and you're co-signing and you're confirming what was said as hearsay, then we could maybe have a conversation about that. You know what I mean? And still, even in that, I'm going to do my very best to not dehumanize him.
Right. No. I love what you do. I think I guess what I'm speaking to is just like generally what you see, just the main topic, the loudest culture mm-hmm. conversation mm-hmm. is always that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But like, this is where as creators we can lead. Like Tyrese's story this week about his Sprinter van catching on fire and them not knowing that it was caught on fire, and him literally saying, my driver, pedal to the metal, car's not moving. And because of that, I told him to pull over. And then when I pulled over, I realized he said it was like Back to the Future. Their entire pathway was on fire. And the Sprinter, underneath the Sprinter where he was laying, was on fire. And he's like, it was a miracle of God that I'm safe. That's not on TMZ. That's not a breaking story. No one's talking about it. But as creators and as leaders and as influencers, we can take something like that. That's an awesome... It's not Tyrese getting messy with DJ Envy. Like, I didn't cover any of that, right? It's Tyrese testifying to the goodness of Jesus. Like, and I want to amplify that story. Like, I want to people to talk about. As complicated as Tyrese is and as many public issues he's had over the years, this brother's still testifying about Jesus. We should celebrate that. You know what I mean?
And you know what I love about what you're saying? I'm talking about a problem, and you just keep talking about how you're being the solution.
I'm trying. I'm genuinely trying to be the solution.
I'm like, hey, yo, so I hate how this XYZ, and you're like, but look. Yeah.
But there's enough in that story that's spicy enough. Tyrese, Fast and the Furious, he's been in the news for all these other issues and all these things with DJ Envy and all this. So there's enough there that creates intrigue, but I'm just also not leaning into the nonsense.
Yeah.
Right? If I'm getting called out on the Breakfast Club and this whole thing. You know, I don't know if you saw that. Like, I'm not leaning into that. I'm leaning into the thing that he pinned on his profile that he, in my opinion, like, this should be on all the blog sites.
Right.
Why are we not talking about this dude potentially dying?
Yeah.
Fast and the Furious star, hello, in the same way that the other dude just, you know, I lost, the star that passed away 15 years ago, 10 years ago. Anyway, the other dude that passed away, right? Like, that could have ended very tragically and poetic in a way, but it didn't. And he's saying it's Jesus. He's saying, it's Jesus saved me. Like, I think we got to highlight those things and shine a light to the folks that are influential, that are sharing their faith, and say, man, you're doing good, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, this move right here, I may not agree with, but like, this is good. Like, this is good. Praise God. Do more of this.
So then doing what you're doing is hard, right? Like, you were talking about, and I didn't even know this until I seen your clip of how the root word of disciple is discipline, right? Clearly, to execute media and content the way you're executing it now takes a lot of discipline. Talk about growing into what it costs to do what you do, and how you had to grow into that.
Sometimes desperation is what causes discipline.
Okay.
We want to be disciplined, but sometimes you need that. I can't get disciplined in my faith because X, Y, and Z. I can't get disciplined in my fitness because it's just hard to wake up early. And then the doctor tells you you're pre-diabetic. And if you don't change your eating habits, you're going to be diabetic. And then you're going, you know, like, and sometimes you need that desperation and coming to the end of yourself to develop the discipline. Ideally, you just are a person that understands enough good habits will compound into good results over the long haul.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that. They're not naturally good at delaying gratification. They're not naturally good at thinking of their life in decades and not in weeks or in months.
Yeah.
So in terms of me on YouTube and the discipline it took, one, it took me first becoming semi-successful as a musician that allowed me the opportunity to have a flexible schedule that let me take a stab at YouTube.
Yeah.
I had a space. That was a studio. I had a flexible schedule that I can go live whenever I needed to. I had some level of resource to have a space and buy equipment.
Yeah.
And that allowed me the opportunity to take a shot at YouTube.
Right.
And then it was, let me lock in. I got nothing to do. It's the pandemic. Desperation. I can't do shows. Right? Music money could dry up any minute now. So let me try and get this thing to spark. I've already been dabbling in it. Let me start dominating in it. So I zoned in. And initially, bro, it was 7 days a week. Like, I know people were like, yo, you got to have a Sabbath. Like, yeah, I get a lot of Sabbath now. But 7 days a week of doing everything, right? So the way you're doing this, bro, in 2019, every show I did, I brought a setup like this and set it up in the green room and interviewed everybody from Wande to Derek Minor to anybody that was willing to sit down and have a conversation with. They didn't even want to do it, right? Like, I remember my man Thizzle played me. He didn't want to have a conversation with me. Now we're buddies and he's been on the channel multiple times. But this was me. All 2019, any event I did, I had this set up. I would pull up on people's hotel room. That conversation you see with Joseph Solomon and Preston Perry, that's in their hotel room. I showed up just like this to their hotel room, got everything set up in 10 minutes, and was like, I know what the video is going to be about. I know what people are talking about. Let me see if I can get something good out of them.
And you edited it yourself?
I was using a video switcher at the time, so it was a one take thing. I remember being in Boston, driving from Boston 4 hours to Manhattan, and setting this up in my hotel room and having my friend come in and doing interviews, right? Me and Foggy Raw were in New York at the end of 2019 and had a setup just like this, interviewed Foggy Raw, and then interviewed Eshaun Burgundy, and then interviewed China Mac in a hotel room, just trying to make it happen. And I did everything, thumbnails, titles, uploading, editing, everything. And in 2020, it caught a little bit of wind with the reaction format and more of the interviews, but it was virtual. And I would do everything, bro. 7 days a week, chopping down as many videos as I can, just trying to figure out how to get the algorithm to pop. And then once it popped, I took the first little bit of money I made and I hired Zach. Zach had been with me since he was 17, since like 2017. Right when the Dream Junkies ended, Zach was around shooting all my music videos for free. The moment I made any money from YouTube, I hired somebody else, you know, and then I hired somebody else and I hired. And then you start hitting that tipping point where now we got systems and now I could be here with you.
Yeah.
And they're editing the main channel video and the live stream is scheduled and thumbnails are done and they got a bunch of videos for the other channel, right? And then you just compound. And now, to be honest with you, like now is the first, like I just bought a house. I just bought a nice car, right? And this is after 4 years of consistently uploading on YouTube.
And I think what I love about that is just like you did whatever it took to get it done. And I think sometimes you have people, sometimes we say, okay, well, I don't have a team, I can't do it.
Right.
Sometimes we say, you know, this. It shouldn't be this hard. Right. You know what I mean? Like right. It shouldn't take 7 days. I'm doing something wrong or this isn't for me. But, you know, you kind of locked in on that discipline. And I think when it comes to excellence is being what leads in industries, clearly this is what led you into this industry.
Here, let me give you another example of this on an inverse side, right? So I did it all. Like I did everything I could to get it popping because I didn't have any other choices. I didn't have many resources. Pandemic, it was locked down. I knew that the doors in music weren't opening the way I needed them to open. So out of a desperation, I had to get YouTube to pop. Here's the flip side of this. My brother Cyrus from Tech is the New Black. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Cyrus. Super dope creator. Yeah. Cyrus was driving Uber and Lyft at night and was barely making it and decided to hop into a tech program, a tech boot camp, and got into digital sale of tech remotely. Mm-hmm. He went from making... I think he was homeless at the time when he was driving for Uber and Lyft to like, boom, his first tech sales job was like 65, 75 a year.
Yeah.
And then he took the money he made from tech and just kept investing in his tech abilities to sales abilities. And it took that money and built out his systems and hired the people and got the team and did it that way. That's another way to do it. Go make a bunch of money and doing something you may not be super passionate about, but you know there's a bag there. You know you can break into tech doing six figures. And that's what he did. And then build something with that money, and he built his own thing. And now I think they're doing well in the seven figures in what they're doing now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's multiple ways to do it, but it all comes down to you got to come to the end of yourself.
Yeah, you know? And there's this, the work smarter, not harder. But at the end of the day, everybody's working.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that I commend you a lot for that. Well, then okay. So then right now, you have a lot of YouTubers now who are kind of doing the Ruslan model a little bit, right?
Okay.
Maybe you wouldn't call it that, but you have the pastor who does something wrong, and then you have the gang of YouTube channels that are like
pile on. They pile on.
Pile on, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm like, do you feel like you kind of birthed these new pastor critiquers or what's up?
That's so funny. I don't know. I feel like that existed before I did it. I feel like that existed and I had a time and a place for that, and that's been there historically. Now, maybe I did it in a way that was a bit more entertaining and a bit less like corny and boring. It was a lot of the discernment ministry people, the heresy hunters. These guys weren't cool. Their quality was trash.
Yeah.
The quality is still trash. They're angry. And I kind of made it light, you know, like I made it more funny. Like my first video ever talking about a pastor was the Gandalf, we're going to break the curse of racism with this staff with Bethel.
Right.
That was the first joint. That was summer 2020. It went viral. That was the first video that went viral. And maybe that I kind of opened up another lane of people coming in to do it. I don't know, because I feel like they were there before, but maybe. And so now... You know, I don't make that kind of content
like that.
Yeah,
I'm like, you don't even really do that like that anymore.
I don't do it like that. I am still triggered by stuff I genuinely find harmful, like stuff I really find harmful. Usually stuff around the new age or the hyper charismaniac stuff. Right. I'll still critique some of that, or the folks on the cessationist end. But generally speaking, I don't really do that. So maybe I don't know. I genuinely don't know, because I don't. Again, I'm an only child, so I don't know that if I created that model or if I had that impact or if it was always there and maybe I just did it with a different sauce and then it just kind of worked for me, you know? But genuinely, it's hard to call that.
Not doing it now, what was your reason for not doing it anymore? As much.
I think I started feeling like the guys who I was critiquing, the critique was mutually beneficial. So after Mike Todd's Easter service, I was like, I think he's doing this on purpose. I think he has a symbiotic relationship with this side of Christian YouTube. And he's doing these things knowing people are going to be upset. And we're upset. And it's just the algorithm feeding itself. So you got the Mike Todd stands that are like, he could do no wrong. And then you got the people that are, all he does is wrong. And I'm in between. I really like Mike Todd. As a person, I like him.
Me too.
I think there's some things doctrinally and with the word, he's been a little sloppy on here or there. Same thing with a Furtick. But I think that there, I go back to the passage in Philippians. I was in Luke today and Jesus talks about, the disciples were arguing about who was the greatest amongst themselves. And he's like, whoever serves is the greatest. And then they said, hey, there's these other folks in here casting out demons in your name. Should we call fire from heaven? I think that was the parallel. And he's like, no. Those that aren't against us are for us, which is really, again, because in Christianity, it's like if they're not with us exactly, the doctrine, then they're against us, right? And so I've just, my position now is the Philippians chapter 2, like, man, whether with false motives or good motives, I'm rejoicing that the gospel is being preached.
Yeah.
Right? The second thing is that I started sitting down with more celebrity pastors and I discovered that most megachurch pastors, like 99%, are really solid dudes. They really love Jesus, and they don't have a public profile. They don't have a book out. They don't have a social media following. Like, most of them are just, so it's like, I don't think it's the issue with the megachurch. And then with celebrity pastors, I just started meeting more celebrity pastors that were like, oh, like, you're an amazing human. Like, Pastor Greg Laurie, he's an amazing human. Like, he's just a really good dude. My relationship with Tim Ross a bit, because I think Tim being there is helpful. You know, I think Tim being there is helpful. And Tim doesn't have an issue with me, with any of my content. Like, he had me on his podcast at the peak of me doing this sort of content, right? I actually thought he was going to bring it up and he didn't. And so I think, like, I'm like, you know, there's certain dudes that God got it. You know, God got it. Would I have done it different? Yeah. Like, Stephen Furtick going out there and saying, I am God Almighty. I think you should have went up there the next Sunday and said, hey, God, sorry, last week I was preaching. I had a slip of the tongue. I don't mean I'm literally God Almighty. I got caught up in the moment. I don't believe I'm, you know, Christ consciousness and New Ageism and da-da-da-da. And I think he could have cleaned that up. He didn't. That's what I would have done. And I've done that in a gang of videos. Hey, in this video, I said X, Y, and Z. I got it wrong. I did it about Mike Todd. I did a whole video where Mike Todd flooded the stage, right? And I was critical of that. I was like, yo, what is he doing? Like, this is a waste. And then I found out it cost him like $1,000 to do it. And I said, I was wrong. My bad. You know? Like, so I've done that before. So it's like, I don't think it's out of the ordinary to correct yourself. But Mike Todd still got videos up today of just sloppy things he said with regards to handling the scripture. I wouldn't do it. I would just clean it up. There's a video up right now that is titled, and anybody can find this, and it says, all ambition is evil. And it's him railing that all ambition is evil while ironically building one of the biggest celebrity pastor platforms and becoming one of the biggest books in the world. So when you tell young men all ambition is evil, no, selfish ambition is evil. Godly ambition is good. Let's talk about godly ambition, right? Like, why is that clip up? Like, the word doesn't say that. And it, you know what I mean? So, like, I think there's a time and a place to critique it, but I don't want that to be my content.
Right. And it's interesting, like, processing that, because because that was probably my intro, I think, to your content to some degree. And I remember just thinking, man, like, he's coming at all my guys. Mm-hmm. I love Steve, you know, but I think with time, my perspective on that has changed. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like seeing that initially was like crossing this line that you should never be crossing. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it may have, that perspective may have come from just not wanting to see division in the church. I think me seeing like, I don't like denominations, just so you know, like, mm-hmm. I, I'm, Jesus mm-hmm. is like the main focus. Yeah, the division confuses most people. Mm-hmm. That's my perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I would see you critiquing the pastors, it'd be like, man, like, why does he have to do this? Mm-hmm. But then I think with time, and just kind of settling into the internet more, mm-hmm. you actually realize that that's probably something that it's happening regardless. Mm-hmm. Like a comment on a post mm-hmm. or a video on like commenting on something mm-hmm. essentially is how the internet functions now today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there may be some bit of healthiness to knowing that there is like an online Christian police mm-hmm. that will like, you know.
Yeah, I like that, the Christian police.
You know what I mean? Like catch you if you're...
Here's my heart. My heart is to have the conversations with them.
Right.
Like I've been actively trying to have a conversation.
Every video you're like, look, I sent him a DM.
I've sent this man multiple DMs. I've sent his brother DMs. I got somebody right now that I used to be real close to and working with him that is trying to set up a conversation. I think it'd be in his best interest to have a non-fluff conversation. I think it'd be in all those guys. I think all those guys should have their own podcast and lean into all the hard conversations. Mm. I think it's healthy. But I do think that hopefully, God willing, talking to them will be better than talking at them through the internet. And yeah. I think that's where I'm hoping. That's where I'm hoping we go. I'm hoping we can go into some of that. You know what I mean? Having those kind of conversations. But I think with regards to critiquing, I do agree with you that there was this line that like you can never say a pastor's name.
Yeah.
You know? And here's the deal. All these dudes.
You step right over that.
But everybody does it behind the scenes. Everybody talks like this behind the scenes, right? We all, I don't know about that part. Yeah. All these dudes do it behind the scenes. One, two. A lot of these brothers do it about other pastors behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because I've been in some of these green rooms. I've been in some of these green rooms.
No, I can imagine.
Right? With some of the biggest names. So, like, everyone's already doing it. So don't hit me with the, it's gossip, but we just do it privately. Mm. What are we talking about? At least I'm congruent. And then three, I would say, if we're doing it privately, you're a public figure. I'm a public figure. I got thousands of look up Ruslan Exposed on YouTube. I got thousands of videos about me. And some of them are right. And some of them I got to repent and learn and listen, even though I wish they didn't go about it this way. But some of them are right, you know?
And I really do think that's just like the internet. It's a cost of it's what the internet is today.
Right.
Joe Budden drops a podcast. The Joe Budden podcast critiquers come in.
Right.
If you have a big platform, people are gonna have platforms critiquing your platform.
Absolutely.
And it's the internet as it functions today.
Yep.
And it just comes with, like we talked about, the cost of things. That's part of the cost of being an internet mega pastor at this point, from my perspective.
Right. Right.
So, how do you think people should view a pastor? Right. Because on one end, we say. Nobody's perfect, you know? And then on another end, whether it's a public video or people talking privately, whenever you see a pastor fall in any capacity, processing that is always interesting, right? What do you think a healthy view or maybe expectation to set for a pastor is?
That's such a good question. I think the word pastor just means shepherd. So someone that's shepherding people, someone that's shepherding the sheep of God. They're entrusted with caring for people. So I think foundationally, I honestly think we have a lot of expectations on pastors today. If you want your pastor to marry you, to bury your family members, to teach the word every Sunday, to counsel you, to show up to your birthday party, to lead the Bible study, and to run a staff and to lead, like that's, I just feel like we put a lot on pastors today. I think it's one of the hardest jobs to have. So I think in terms of healthy expectations, like I think we just first got to know, like, yo, pastors are humans. Like they have real lives and real issues and real things going on in their real life. So I think one, just knowing that they're human, I would say it's foundationally. Two, I would say someone that's more enamored with teaching the word, leading the church, loving the people. Right. I think those are healthy expectations.
Right.
And I want as many pastors that are solid in that area. I want to see those people platformed. I want to see those people with voices. I want to see those people build and drop books and impact society. The guys that have been doing it for 20, 30 years, consistently without an asterisk next to their name, or once upon a time this happened. You know, like, I want to see those people platform.
Right.
And so I think having that expectation of their pastors, I think is good. But then I also think have an expectation that you are responsible for your own spiritual formation and development, right? Your pastor is there to guide you and lead you, but you got to get in the word for yourself. You got to get in the scriptures. You got to get, and we all, you know, we talk about accountability and community and all these things. And it's like, well, are you first accountable to your own words? You say you're going to do something, do you do it? So I think pastors are there to guide you. I've never gotten mad at my health coach because I decided to eat the cookies and the ice cream. Why am I getting mad at him for it? He's there to guide me and coach me and lead me. He's not there to pull up to my house and feed me like I'm a little bird, and he does the chewing for me and then he sprinkles the food in my mouth. Like, that's not your pastor's job, right? So even this talk of like, I'm not being fed. What does that mean? You're not being fed. Are you feeding yourself, right? And so I understand if someone's new to the faith, that's different. But if you in this thing, you've been walking with the Lord, like, you got to learn to cook and feed and feast on your own. And so I would say that, like, your pastor's job is not to be mama bird and your baby bird, and they're just going to do the chewing for you and put it in your mouth. Pause. Right. Your pastor is there to guide you, to lead you, to teach the word, to lead the church, to love the people. So I think if we had more of those expectations, and then the last thing I'll say is this is going to sound crazy, but an expectation of me to keep myself accountable to my word, but then to also give, right? Like, there's a lot of pastors out here that are not doing well. They're not able to buy a home. They're not able to do any of the things that, yeah. Right? So be accountable to your church and plug into a church and serve at the church and give to the church and be generous to the church that you're at, considering the other aspects. You got the other aspects. Like, the pastor's really about preaching the word. He's really about leading the people. He's really about loving the people. I would say then we have a responsibility to lean into that.
I love that. And I love that a lot, actually. And I love that example that you gave on, let's say, like a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. Like, if I had a personal trainer who ate a donut, that doesn't, although he should not be eating donuts all the time, I don't know if, like, let's say if he did eat a donut, if that disqualifies him from being qualified to, train me in fitness or something or whatever. So I love what you're doing. I love what you're saying. I really appreciate you for having this conversation. God bless you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man. Thank you. Let's go.